Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Talking Calcio Podcast here with Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, alongside Claudio Villalobos here on the Game Nashville Sports Network. Claudio, what a, I guess you could call it an odd weekend, but also a fantastic weekend. A lot of soccer, a lot of action. And then we get into a little bit of a midweek, along with Nashville playing Chattanooga Red Wolves this past Tuesday night. Wednesday night, all my days are running together. But a lot of fun soccer, a lot of great information that we have to break it all down before Saturday's match against Charlotte.
You're right, Nick. Hello to everyone. Well, we're back here. Interesting two games for Nashville. I was there, of course, at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. And, you know, it's one of those games, I think, I'm not sure if you agree or not, but or the listeners, one of those games where a team actually deserves a win, you know. And, of course, we know well enough that in sports, it's not that how much you deserve, but how much you conquered after you've done the effort. Nashville really did the effort to come away with a victory there in Atlanta, but couldn't. And maybe the game last night wasn't as good, but they did won the game. You know, I was saying at the end of my intervention, of course, in Spanish from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, that sometimes in this case football, teams play very well and they don't win. Teams play bad and they come up with a win, and sometimes they deserve and they don't get more than 1 point, like it happened in Atlanta. Last night was a different story, Nick.
Oh, absolutely. Last night was a different story. Going to Saturday, this past Saturday, when they were in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Nashville drew 1-1 with Atlanta United. Obviously, Nashville, the second half, I'll say this, Claudio, watching the first half into the second half, there were some adjustments BJ Callahan made, and it was telling, because it was almost like Atlanta kind of had their number, and it was one of those situations where we talked about it before the game began, was that, you know, Atlanta's been shut out the last three games. They haven't scored a goal before playing Nashville for the last three games. And so that meant just to me that they're hungry. They're going to come out guns a-blazing. They're going to be trying to score goals. And sure enough, Almiron scores the first goal of the game. And then it kind of puts Nashville behind the eight ball a little bit. They start to get all ruffled up. They're not able to find their feet for the most part. And second half, BJ Callahan makes some adjustments, and I would say more attacking adjustments in that case. And sure enough, Daniel Lovitz ties the game, and it's off a set piece. And again, Claudio, a defender scores for Nashville. And it just blows my mind that the stat keeps on rising. It is now six games, I believe, there are six goals.
And six goals.
Yeah, excuse me. Six goals and eight assists, from a defense core from Nashville scoring goals, which is kind of crazy. That's Daniel Lovett's second of the year. We'll get into more of the Chattanooga Red Wolves game, but not just a little prelim to that. Josh Bauer scored in that game, the only lone goal. Another defender scoring out of that. But just going back to the Atlanta game about that goal specifically, and we kind of chuckled back and forth. You were texting me, oh, what's a good headline for something like this? And we had some good fun with it. But
with it.
I will say that Daniel Lovitz, and we mentioned this in a few episodes before, BJ Callahan has found, I think, the missing puzzle piece into getting the most out of players. I just don't know what it is, but his system, even though it requires a lot of fitness, even the veteran players, I don't know if it's the buy-in process, I can't really put my finger on it, but all these veteran players that we all think that their legs are going to be tired by the 75th minute, They're not. They're playing at a high level, and BJ Callahan's getting the most out of it, and productive minutes, not just, you know, boring minutes, productive, solid minutes.
You know, what catches my attention of what this situation about, all of a sudden, because that's true, all of a sudden, defenders in Nashville are scoring and taking care of opportunities that, how do I say this, Nico? The fact that a defender scores is probably not big news. Maybe a little bit of a bigger news in Nashville. But where they scored is what catches me. Where? I mean, look at where Dan Lovitz is there in the middle, right just about touching the small box. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's right there in the mix of things. What does he have? I mean, somebody asked me, what does he have to do being there? Nothing, I guess. Well, now it does on the BJ. I mean, he just tells him to get in the mix, and then he takes advantage of this stuff. I guess I'm not sure if the defenders are not ready to see a left wing coming into those positions and try to score. Rarely happens, to be honest with you, because usually the teams are always having these guys a little bit on the outside, on each side, waiting for any ball that might ricochet or come their way, and have them like maybe right direct a cross, or maybe take a shot. But having a guy like look at Bauer last night, right in the middle of all things, right there inside the box as well. This is something else.
It really is, Claudio. And to that point, I mean, I'm going to kind of backtrack a little bit when it comes to post-match press conferences. I believe it was three home games ago. The second or third home game. I asked BJ Callahan when he subbed on Ahmed Kasem, and I think this was around the time when you and I were talking back and forth of, I don't know if I like seeing Ahmed Kasem being too flashy with the ball. He could be passing the ball a little bit more. And then I asked BJ Callahan after that game, like, hey, what do you think about Ahmed Kasem and his creativity? Do you encourage stuff like that? And to me, it gave reassurance to hear BJ Callahan say, oh, yeah, I love that our players are creative. I love them to take chances. I want them to take chances. So with that being said, fast forward to this past Saturday and last night against Chattanooga, these defenders are taking chances. BJ Callahan, from my perspective and piecing together the words that he is speaking to the media and also the fans, having his players want to take chances, you see guys like Josh Bauer off the volley against Chattanooga Tuesday night. The volley was near the top of the 18 on the corner of the 18, and it was a laser beam. That ball was a stripe to the back end of the net. And it was far post too, which makes it even more incredible. But the quality of the touch, the quality of the ball hitting the foot and striking it with such class, that's what impresses me the most from these defenders. Andy Nahar scoring when he scored his first goal for Nashville this season. It was an impressive run, and it was an impressive finish, a tight window to the near post. You look at Daniel Lovitz this past Saturday. Like you said, he's just in the mix. He's there in the box. He's waiting for the ball to drop to his feet. And, you know, it reminds me of hockey. When you have, they call them those grinders, the guys that are on the grinder lines. They just do whatever you want, whatever you need. That's what BJ Callahan has incorporated into this new Nashville SC 2.0 culture. He's incorporated these veteran guys like, I need you to be a grit and grind type guy.
You know, just to put the in this case we're talking about Bauer and Lovitz, but just to kind of single out Lovitz and the whole thing to understand the real change that the 2.0, like you just called the Nashville 2.0, you got to realize that this is what in Atlanta Dan Lovitz played his 150th game for Nashville, 150 games. And this is the first time in those 150 when he got two goals in a season. And by the way, he is the leader defensive player with five goal contributions with three assists as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a big change right there. That's a big change right there, because that could be numbers that maybe a midfielder, sometimes a striker that doesn't play much minutes will have. But to say that a guy like Lovitz, all of a sudden he comes in there, and you know, and the pace he's getting in there, I wouldn't be surprised, Nick, if we're talking and we're seeing Lovitz being the most productive halfback of the season in the whole MLS.
I would not be surprised either, Claudio. I will say, though, I think when we see after the All-Star break, if this team is in a playoff position, I think that's when you're going to see, I don't know, my gut. Again, I go back to the weekend show that I do over 1025 The Game, 9 to 11, Force Company. I have a thing, my gut feeling. And normally my gut feeling does not steer me in the wrong direction. Something's telling me after the All-Star break, we're going to see a different gear out of Daniel Lovitz. And I know that sounds crazy because we've already, to me, I think we've all already seen Daniel Lovitz exceed expectations under BJ Callahan. I think there's still something else that Daniel Lovitz can still help with this team, help add another factor to this offense and also defense. And I'm really intrigued to see what that is.
I agree. I mean, and just just coming back to my opening statement for the podcast, when I said that Nashville probably deserve, I mean, when you're, how long or how many times have you talked? I mean, we followed this team for forever since the USL. And how many times could we say, and I'm not talking about anybody in particular, just saying it, that Nashville going away and being a 59% ball possession against a 41 for not the other team. You know, how many times have we said that Nashville had 12 shots for six in Atlanta United? I mean, really, this is not the Nashville we kind of grew knowing for the last few seasons.
No.
No, not at all. I mean, not even close. 59% Nashville away, that's unheard of.
It really is. And it's not, like I always say, it's not your Nona's Catenaccio anymore, meaning
no.
It's not your door bolt, you know, score a goal and park the bus anymore. That's not what we're doing around here in Nashville, apparently. It's the I score a goal and, oh, wait a minute, let me score three more after that. Oh, no, let's score a couple more. That mentality goes, it just revitalizes the, I guess the best way to put it, revitalizes the culture of the team. I mean, that's the best way to put it.
Listening to Lovitz after in the press conference as well, he even says it very well. I mean, I'm enjoying, he said, because he was talking about himself, I'm enjoying being in the team that is the aggressor in the field, even when visiting. And that's a big change right there. He's right. He's enjoying being the team that takes it to the other team and say, well, even though you score on us, this is how we actually react to try to tie the game and even win it. Now, this one thing that I was kind of thinking about it when I was watching the first half of the game in Atlanta, Nick, uh-huh. is that the fact that I knew there was going to come a change because that's BJ. BJ, I mean, he studies the game very well strategically, and I know he's going to do something. He started doing it even before the halftime break. But what caught my attention is if you see a team like, unless you're not watching what Nashville is doing this season, I'm not sure what happened to Atlanta and his coach at this time. Because seeing what Nashville does, one thing that I would probably take advantage of this team if I have him against the ropes is to try to score the second goal and try to make them have to do even more to try to come back and tie the game. But I'm not sure what happened. I mean, maybe they were just thinking too early, in my opinion, about having some kind of a positive result. Atlanta, I'm talking about. But they kind of let the reins off and then allow Nashville to start getting into the game early. I mean, maybe not early, but at least in the last third of the first half and fully in the second half. I mean, and really, you got to be kind of lucky or whatever. You put it anywhere you want. But the fact that Atlanta didn't come away with another loss is I don't know, pure luck or maybe. But not really. I'm going to take that back. Because before I think about that, I have to talk about Brad Guzan. Brad Guzan was the real factor in the game. Mm-hmm. He made three huge saves that they would have been scores for Nashville. Nashville would have been, without Brad Guzan there, without the afternoon he had, Nashville comes off of Atlanta with at least a 4-1 victory.
Oh, 100%. I think you were the one that asked him in the post-match press conference. I think BJ even chuckles, yeah, Brad's world class. Like, well, you can't help that. I mean, that's something that just happens. You know, I mean, he's a world-class goalkeeper. But overall, like that game specifically, Nashville, you mentioned the 59% ball possession. I believe it was the question I asked in the press conference, BJ Callahan, about, you know, exploiting the right flank of the field with Andy Nahar. I believe Nashville had 58% of, according to the Apple TV broadcast, had 58% of their, I guess, attacks come from the right flank. And I believe I asked BJ Callahan about that, and BJ went along to say, you know, paraphrasing obviously, that this is primarily the aspect of getting behind the lines. BJ talks a lot about getting behind the lines, finding the pockets in space, and he said there were some lines that were being exploited. And he just wanted to take advantage of it, which is understandable. I mean, it's the easiest way to say it, but at the same time, when you see it visually, you'll understand what he's saying. So exploiting the lines, the defense line, midfield, and forwards, Andy Nahar is so fast and is so just technically sound. When you have a right back like that, you open up so many opportunities. Like, I mean, against a team like Atlanta who's been struggling as of recent, you have to exploit those opportunities, and they did. And it's, again, back to your initial point at the beginning of the podcast, unfortunately, they did not get the win. But if you look at the grand scheme of the whole month of May, this is a great step in the right direction. And I think it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So you got to take it step by step. This Nashville team have not lost any points per se when it comes to losing stuff, but they did leave 2 points on the table in the month of May.
Say in a different way, it's not how you start, but how you finished. Mm-hmm. So that's so important right there. I mean, Nashville at this point, and this is a key moment in the season. I'm not going to say it's just key moment because of the three games, you know, at home. I mean, Nashville needs to make sure that they make the most points out of these three coming up games, starting with Charlotte this coming Saturday, because then they're going to have to go out there somewhere away and play three games as well. So this is a key part of the season where the team needs to stress that type of mentality of being the aggressor, especially at home, and try to take it to the teams and get the most points possible, because going away, like, we've talked about it, that the coaches talk, the players say it's not easy. It's not easy at all in this league. And then whatever you might gain here, you could also lose it away. But at least if you have gained it, then you can actually have a you know, a little break there in terms of how you can manage your strategic tactic going away, man, Nick, because this is going to be three important games. It already, I mean, believe it or not, it started last night, and it started the right way. One thing that you have to do when there is a game like this, a knockout game, I mean, the main thing is win. Doesn't matter how you do it. Just win. Win the game and go to the next. Of course, people would say, I mean, I'm going to just introduce the last night game. People would say, well, I mean, Chattanooga is a so-so and lower division team and whatever. True. That's true, but still, you need to come up with a win. A lot of times, these teams have beaten MLS teams before, and just that's the way it is, because they come with they come to play in a different way. They come to play the main game of the whole season for them. You know, and of course, Nashville and BJ had to do what he did last night. He had to give these other guys opportunities, because in a long season like this, we needed to see that. We saw a lot of good stuff. We saw other stuff that I'm not going to say worries me, but I'm going to say that players that need more minutes for sure, stuff that needs to be worked with them, through them, and with them, you know, because otherwise he's going to have a lot of problems. If and we talked this about before, he's going to have a lot of problems if one of the main starters gets injured or something else happens.
You make a lot of great points there, Claudio. I'm going to go back to your initial point there. You mentioned about getting points at home, especially in the castle, as some people call it, the fans do, at Geodis Park. You have to be able to secure 3 points on a, I guess you would say at this point, on a daily basis, because their whole month of May, they have a slew of games. They have their game this weekend against Charlotte. It's a home game. And then not only 4 days later, it's a Wednesday night game, midweek game against the New York Red Bulls at home. And then after that, they have a game on Saturday, 3 days later, against DC United. Former Nashville SC player Randall Leal will be, I believe, on the team for DC United there. So a little homecoming there for Randall Leal. And then after that, on the 24th, the following week, Nashville goes over to Canada, to Toronto, to take on Toronto FC, and then Columbus, and then New York City FC. And these are all within the 4 to 5 days, 3 days. And this is the, I will say, the toughest part of the season for Nashville, yes, especially. So I think this is going to be a true test, not only for the team, but for BJ Callahan. You made a statement earlier, Claudio, that that BJ Callahan studies this game religiously. I mean, he studies this game like no other. I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong, Claudio, it was Josh Bauer that mentioned, or it might have been Johnny Perez Tuesday night, that this team studies a lot of film. Film is a huge part of how this team basically just gets ready for their opponent.
Bauer, yeah. Bauer said that Josh,
So Josh Bauer said that before the Chattanooga game, that film is a huge part of how this team studies other opponents. Obviously, so you're in the 21st century, understandable. But at the same time, you can pick up little quirks. You can pick up certain things that players do when it comes to running out on the, like an overlapping run, an in swinging run, anything along those lines, passing it in a certain direction on a certain part of the field, stuff like that. To me, I get too enamored with that. I get too caught up in all that. So for me to look at BJ Callahan and this team, it is a huge month of May to make sure that this team, honestly, if they can come out of the month of May with only one loss or two losses, that is a huge success in my eyes.
It should be. I mean, I agree with you completely. And I mean, is Nashville capable? I believe so. I do believe so. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, what we're seeing so far, even in defeat from this team has been really good. I mean, just gotta go back to the rival this coming weekend. What happened in the last game they played there at the Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte? Nashville was the best team on the game in the first half. I mean, it was sad that they could not play a little bit better in the second half, and they ended up getting beat. But that tells you that Nashville is prepared again on a turf surface. Like it is the Bank of America Stadium. They show very well, show up to play well in Atlanta again under those conditions. So it's a team that is anybody who believes, or whom I don't think anybody is, but if anybody's thinking that Nashville is coming to town and we might be able to get, a walk in the park or easy points against this team, no, you better think it twice, because that's not the case with this team. And on the other hand, well, Philadelphia was the first one to suffer that with that 3-0 loss, 3-1 loss. I can't remember the score, Nick, but you know, would I be surprised if Nashville wins nine points out of these three games? No, I think they can do it. But no disrespect to other teams, but coming into Jody's Park, the way this team handles the ambience here and everything else, is very difficult for any team, and we've seen it many years. But right now, I believe. Remember, Nashville lost that power, that strength that they have playing at Jody's. That's back in there. That's back in play, and they know it. The players know it. The rivals know it as well. And you know, you got to be careful when you come to Nashville right now. I guess unless you want to talk about anything else, Nick, I would like at any time during our podcast to kind of go through what we saw last night in terms, maybe not about the victory. People might have think, well, Nashville should have won that game 2-3. I don't know how many games because of the opposition. But at least myself, I would like to talk about what we saw in terms of the personnel that BJ used last night. Which it was not unexpected, no. But I wanna see if you can go, Nick, you and I, not by one by one, or maybe so, why not, with the players that showed up last night and how they're raising their hand to tell BJ, hey, maybe I can help you with more minutes in the main roster.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was headed next, was last night's game or Tuesday night's game against this Chattanooga Red Wolves. Nashville SC defeated the Chattanooga Red Wolves 1-0. They head on to the round of 16 to either play Orlando City SC, the MLS side, or I believe USL League One side, to the Tampa Bay Rowdies. So that'll be an interesting Florida-Nashville matchup, whoever else it may be. But last night's game was very interesting. I mean, let me just state this first. For those that love to listen to the Talking Calcio podcast, Claudio Villalobos, take a round of applause and a bow for the crowd, because you had the starting lineup exactly correct. This guy texts me not even 24 hours before the game and goes, hey, I think I know the starting lineup. I was like, okay, send it to me. He sends it to me, listed off Brian Schwick, Chris Applewhite, Josh Bauer, Taylor Washington, Wyatt Meyer, Brian Acosta, Gaston Brugman, Matthew Corcoran, Johnny Perez, Ahmed Kasem, and Till Bunbury. I said, Claudio, that sounds pretty good, but I still think you're crazy. I don't think we see that many changes. I'll be darned. This guy was right. And sure enough. And I will say to that point, Claudio, well done, because that just goes to show you that you know BJ Callahan soccer. You know ball. I think you have to tell BJ Callahan, hey, if you need somebody on the touchline, let me know. I can help replace if need be.
I promise I'll remind him next time we see him, for sure.
You need to. You need to.
He's going to have a good laugh anyways. He's a really cool guy.
But hey, I'll say this about the game last night. This team, a lot of young guys, okay? A lot of young guys, but they showed their professionalism. They showed their maturity, especially with Chris Applewhite. There were a lot of firsts for a lot of people. Brian Schwake, his first start in net for Nashville, or Schwake. I really don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's Schwake.
Chris, I think it myself. Yeah,
Chris Applewhite got a start last night. He's the first homegrown Nashville SC player in club history.
Could you tell that he's 17-year-old by what he did last night?
Chris Applewhite?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. He, like I said, the professionalism and maturity of these players last night, it really, if you had to ask me how old is Chris Applewhite, obviously, everybody's taller than me, so I think they're about 5 or 6 years older than me. But I think this kid, you said he was 17. He carries himself like a young 22, 23-year-old.
Yes.
He understands the game just – he understands the game quickly. Like, he's able to adapt quickly. If there's a ball that's, you know, in an odd position, he knows how to position himself well on the back line. And last night – unfortunately, Taylor Washington went off with an injury around the 30th minute, give or take. I don't know what kind of injury they talked about. BJ said that he didn't have any injury news on that after the game. But Taylor Washington, I looked at the replay. His knee went inward. It kind of buckled. And then it looked like the guy fell on his ankle first and then his knee buckled. So prayers sent his way. Hopefully he gets to a speedy recovery. But
we want to say hi to Taylor, and he's one of the best. He's one of the great guys in the team. We love him. We do. Everybody does. And we wish him the best. I mean, it's kind of unlucky because he was giving it all he did, like you said in the interview previously when we talked to him, Ben and Jacob and I in the field. Mm-hmm. He just gives 120 or 130 or 200% when he gets a chance. And that's what he was doing yesterday. And that's why he got injured. That's the exact reason. He just goes to every ball like that. And, well, we hope he recovers and comes back to us very quickly. Keep going, Nick.
Yeah, no, please. Yeah, I think having Taylor Washington go down and hopefully with a speedy recovery, because Nashville kind of need him in a roundabout way with the depth purpose of things.
Yes.
One player I would love to highlight, and I even asked about it in the post-match press conference, was Wyatt Meyer. You know, this kid, obviously, he has the background of a center back from college. But when Nashville were in a pinch when it came to injuries at the beginning of the season, it was a young midfield of Matthew Corcoran and Wyatt Meyer as midfielders. And it was interesting because, you know, in that first game, New England Revolution, they had Matthew Corcoran kind of sitting back a little bit, playing almost like a six in a roundabout way, that center defensive mid, almost box to box in some regard, depending on, you know, where the possession of the ball was. And then Wyatt Meyer was the true box to box in that regard and being able to command the field as a point guard in some cases. But last night, Wyatt Meyer went from center back, back to left back. And it just shows his versatility. And when you have a guy like that, it reminds me of baseball. When you have a utility player that can play the outfield, can catch, can play the infield.
First base,
whatever.
Whatever.
That's exactly what Wyatt Meyer is. And it shows the intelligence level. You know, Nashville, when they bring in all these young guys like a Matthew Corcoran and a Wyatt Meyer.
The Kike Hernandez of Nashville.
Yeah, there you go. The Kike Hernandez of Nashville. I love that. Good Dodger reference there. Yeah, he's everywhere. I love that. That made my day, Claudio. That just made my day. But Wyatt Meyer, especially when Nashville brings in all these young players, Ahmed Kasem, Johnny Perez, not only are they good with the ball at their feet, but they are technically sound up in the noggin, up in the brain. Yes. These kids under, like initially to my initial point about last night, these young players carry themselves as true professionals. And to me, that only shows that the strength and I guess longevity of the future of the core for Nashville going forward, it seems to be in good hands. Just hopefully so they all stay healthy. But Wyatt Meyer last night, he had a phenomenal game. I think when he was put out at left back, again, back to what BJ Callahan uses in his vocabulary of splitting the lines and getting behind the lines and finding those pockets. Obviously, Chattanooga last night, they were playing a five at the back. So it was quite difficult for Nashville to create a lot of really good chances. And they made
a big wall right there, wasn't it?
It was a massive wall. It was a wall of wolves. It was a wall of wolves. But Wyatt Meyer, it's interesting how that he played, because when the ball was in his possession in the second half and Chattanooga started playing a very strict five at the back, he kept taking his space. And kept taking his space, and almost to the point where he creeped almost at the top of the 18 and almost thought that he may have wanted to take a shot, but he was smart enough and intelligent to find those pockets to where Nashville were to put in place a Brian Acosta or a Gaston Brugman. Or if the ball possession was not there, Meyer could easily just swing it to the right side of the top of the 18 from the left to not only Matthew Corcoran, the central defending midfielder in this 4-3-3 they played last night.
I mean, you know, when you, and I fully agree with all the concepts that you're saying about Wyatt Meyer, because he just shows what this team has right there in the store for this year. I mean, already he's already a reality. He's only 24 years old. I mean, he's a young guy and he can give so much to this team. And I would love to see him. I hope BJ finds a way to give a guy like Matt Wyatt more minutes with the starting lineup, because he's gonna do really good for the team. He's gonna rest somebody. He's gonna give the other guys a possibility of other situations inside the pitch. And there's another guy right there that and even BJ referred to him and after a question I made. About Matthew Corcoran, man. I mean, Matthew Corcoran, he just took care of the team last night. He just decided, this is my team tonight, period. This is my team. I want to be the one here. I'm in the middle. I'm going to be quarterbacking the whole game. He was awesome, Nick. I mean, the way he does, the way he runs back and forth, box to box, he goes to the sides, he comes back to the defense, oh, my God. I mean, Matthew Corcoran last night, to me, is one of those. And I would love to see him right there paired with, I don't know, Jasbeck, maybe with Eddie sometime. And I'm sure at one point we're going to see that combination there with Matthew, because BJ is so happy with his performance, especially last night, that I know he's going to find him a way to get in there. And you got to be careful if you're a player in Nashville in that middle, because if BJ gives, I'm sorry, Matthew Corcoran more minutes with the main lineup, he might not give it back again.
I mean, I can't doubt that, because, I mean, he gave a tough test for BJ to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I do have a spot for him. And, you know, with Wyatt Meyer, and I don't want to keep going back to Wyatt Meyer, but I want to stick with these young guys here. Matthew Corcoran, Wyatt Meyer. With Taylor Washington out, I think to me it states that you have to keep a guy like Wyatt Meyer on the bench, not only for depth purposes at left back, but if somebody were to go down in the midfield and, like, To the point of having Brian Acosta out there last night and Gaston Brugman, it was great to get minutes from those guys, because, yes, you want them to get minutes under their belt, but at the same time, again, like you just mentioned with Matthew Corcoran, if Matthew Corcoran's playing better soccer than Brian Acosta, you're going to have to give the extra edge to Corcoran.
Yes, sir.
So, like, if it's either Wyatt Meyer, Matthew Corcoran, or whoever else is available off the bench, there's going to have to be some space for those two guys.
And, you know, and you mentioned this really well, because to me, and anytime you do this in the media, especially, we kind of play a little bit of a coach as well, just like anybody else does, just like I did with the starting lineup, pretty much guessing. I mean, how would I know what for sure BJ wants to do? But, you know, We think that just to say with names, I mean, we know that Jaspik and Eddie at the main started right there in the very middle, the Luck in the middle, and then we maybe think that the next two up are going to be Brian Acosta and Brookman. But then all of a sudden, we have Merrick with a great game last night, and we have Corcoran as well. And now wait a second. Maybe we have to reorder this stuff, okay? And nothing against anybody. I mean, Acosta actually looked really good for the time he's played.
He did.
I mean, you got to take that. You got to realize that as well. I mean, Corcoran has been playing with the U20 team, national team, and training with them and everything. So he's been competing, you know, somewhere or another. But Brian Acosta is coming from a long injury. He's still trying to recover. He hasn't had enough minutes competing against teams like that. Only a few minutes in Alabama with the team. Yeah. That's about it. So you cannot ask him or say, well, Acosta didn't look as well as Corcoran. No, but there's a reason for that. However, Brian Acosta is a great player. He's an awesome player. I mean, just waiting to see if you can start seeing him more minutes. He's gonna feel more confident. He's gonna feel better about his injury going away, and we're gonna see a lot of stuff that comes from him that we've seen before that is very good. But at this point, it's difficult for a guy like Brian when he's trying to come back and trying to gain or maybe claim a spot in the starting lineup. And then some young kid named Matthew Corcoran and another one, Wyatt Mayer, decide to have a great game as soon as they put their shoes on. I mean, that's tough.
It really is. And also, too, I want to talk about that midfield pairing last night and that three midfield. And I mentioned it to you. It wasn't even 12 minutes into the game. I texted you. I said, Claudio, look at this midfield. Look at the way they're placed out on the field. They were almost placed in an I formation. You had one guy at each level of the field. You had your four at the back. Then you had Matthew Corcoran playing as that defensive midfielder. Then you had Brian Acosta playing as literally a central midfielder by himself. Nobody to the left or right of his shoulder. And then right directly in front of him in a free-flowing Trey Quartista attacking midfielder role was none other than Gaston Brugman. And I was so baffled by it. I was like, I understand that Chattanooga's giving them a five at the back look, but what? I couldn't comprehend it. But at the same time, I was like, I kind of like it. I kind of like what Nashville's doing. They're doing something unconventional that throws everything out the door. And sure enough, it kind of worked. I mean, it was tight at the beginning, but it helped break up some of the lines. And I think another credit to BJ Callahan's creativity with these midfielders. It's not only because they're intelligent on the field, but BJ Callahan's tactics are just on another level. Like, they're just to the point of, like, everybody wants to be the next Pep Guardiola, the next, Claudio Ranieri, whoever it may be.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
BJ Callahan's making a name for himself and doing his own tactics, obviously so, but doing his own tactics in a different way where it makes everything stand out.
Yeah, I like the fact that he's not trying to be the next anybody. He's just trying to be the next better BJ Callahan. That's enough. That's all he cares about, and he's doing it. He knows he's going to find a niche. And maybe, I don't know how many years from now, we're going to be talking about a BJ, how do you call that? A BJ school, maybe? Who knows?
You could.
Maybe. You could very well be talking about his school, he's not looking for that. He's not, you know how he is. He's just a humble, nice guy. He's just trying to do his best of his job. But he might be into something if he keeps going that way, because he's trying to be as creative as a coach has been in the MLS at this point. And he's only been here, as many games as this season is bad, and maybe the few he played last season, which is six of them. So, you know, it's amazing. It's nice. It's nice to see somebody trying to actually not discover soccer, because this has been forever. Football's been for years. But he's trying to do, to kind of tickle things, put his own style in a few things. And and the main thing, you know, I don't know if you agree with this or not, Nick, he's not afraid of doing it. He's not afraid. He said, I'm going to try this. I have the guys who can do it. If for whatever reason this doesn't go right, hey, I'll just switch right away. And come back to a more, not conservative, but to a more
traditional.
traditional of what we've been doing lately, but he's not afraid to try anything. That's good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one more thing about the midfielders, especially Gaston Brugman. Obviously, BJ Callahan mentioned, I asked him about, you know, putting those type of, I guess, attacking midfielders into trying to place them into pockets of the defense.
Is he question right there related? Forget the introduction, Nick. Is he having problems trying to find a place, a correct place for Brugman at this point?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think there's... I don't want to say he's having an issue finding a spot for Gaston Brugman, but the adjustment process is a little bit difficult. It's a little bit difficult. I know I just rephrased it in a different, you know, wording, but yeah. I think it's a little bit different to the point where last night, I think you have Gaston Brugman in that free-flowing attacking midfielder role just because of the amount of numbers that you had on the bench. You only have 7 guys available off the bench, and then you have a guy like Gaston Brugman, one, who needs minutes, two, who is veteran world-class, not world-class, but, I mean, who is veteran that is classy, who understands the game, is technically sure. sound. You can play him in that role. You trust a veteran like that to get you what you need, the result you need. And so I think putting him at that attacking mid-role is okay for just a game against Chattanooga. I think personally where I would love to see Gaston Brugman play, I guess, in a natural role, I mean, I think playing him in a 4-3-3 is the right formation, but as a regular role, like as an 8. You get what I'm saying? As more of a box-to-box style midfielder. But here's the thing, though. It comes, and I always mention this to you, with these veteran players, it comes down to legs. The fatigue, I think, between Gaston Brugman and, I hate to say this, but because Brian Acosta is coming off injury, I have to put him into this same category. Gaston Brugman and Brian Acosta, the fatigue thing kind of gets to me a little bit. And I'm not saying that these guys can't go 90 minutes because I think they can. I think Gaston Brugman can easily go 80 minutes, 85 minutes. Brian Acosta is not quite there because of the injury. I think he's getting there. But as for Gaston Brugman's place in the lineup, would love to see him as just a holding midfielder. I think I wouldn't say a defensive midfielder because I don't think he's as great on defense as we may think. But I think having him as a almost box to box in some regard, I think that would be his best fit.
I think so. I agree. I mean, I agree with you with the Brian Acosta. He's gonna get much better as soon as he gets in game shape.
Yeah.
Because one thing is to be in shape, one thing is to be physically ready and fit. Is something that's being in game shape, and that you can only get that by playing regular season games. And in the case of the only thing about Brugman is that BJ's. And he took advantage of the game just last night in his case, but switching them into different positions, first half and second half. You already described what he was trying to do with him in the first half. And then the second half, he kind of put him up there like where maybe regularly closer to the position that Sam Surridge plays. You know, that's what he tried last night against Chattanooga, yeah. Trying to see if he can actually get him better with his ball control and maybe getting somebody inside the box and with a short pass inside. A lot of things he can do right there in front of the area. But if I'm not mistaken, it was against Real Salt Lake, Nick?
Yes.
When he played the 90 minutes, he plays the best game that I've seen from Brugman. I believe that's where he needs to go. I believe that's his position. Now, does he need, though at that time he was playing in there with was it him and Eddie?
Eddie.
Guy. The problem, and we discussed about many times, even off the microphone. And to do that, he has to keep Jasbeck in the bench. That's difficult. That's difficult. Because I was looking at the stats here, and you remember how many times we talked about Eddie Taxet being the guy that runs the most in the league.
Mm-hmm.
We said it that many times. Well, guess what? The guy the from all players, all 22 players on the bench, well, and besides the others that came in and substitutions in Atlanta, was Jasbeck.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you right there that it's not easy to just say, well, I'm gonna sit Jasbeck right now, because what he does, especially running back and forth, chasing balls and whatever he does, all the stamina he puts into the field is not something that you can easily say, I'm gonna I'm gonna be I can actually discard this today and have a Brugman come in place.
Right.
Not because of Brugman. Don't get me wrong, but because of Jastrzebski.
So two things out of your comments here. Your first thing back to Gaston Brugman and mentioning about, you know, his position on the field and how we agree on that and so forth about Real Salt Lake and that. But the thing I've been so torn about, and I keep thinking about this from last night, is Brugman's positioning in the final third. That I just, to me, seeing Brugman in the final third, it was almost like he wanted to be that creator that we know he is, that artist on the field. He wanted to have the ball and create some sort of opportunity. Because there were times I'd see him almost in the same position out on the right flank where Ahmed Kasem was. And they would kind of get intertwined and they wouldn't be able to gel right. Do you know what I'm talking about watching that
yes.
game? They
yes.
just seemed like they were on the same page and being in the same position. And there was so much space in the midfield because Brian Acosta was just playing almost at the midline, at the midfield line, and he'd barely creep up to the final third. And Matthew Corcoran would be playing more at the top of the 18 on the other side of the field. And so you had this gaping space at the middle of the top of the 18. And nobody's there because Gaston Brugman, I understand he wants to be the creative. He has that in his brain wired that, oh, I am that midfielder. I have to have that creative role. Like, I know he can do more than that. But at the same time, it's just, it's hard because that's where BJ Callahan said at the end of the game that, you know, at the press conference that, yeah, we put Gaston in a different role tonight. And to me, that just says, they just put him in that role because they knew they could get the job done with him in an odd role that he's not comfortable with. That's what I got out of that.
I agree. And again, I'm not going to say that we know or I know more than anybody else, but just by looking at what happens with the team from the games that we see so far, Gaston Brugman, BJ, and apparently everybody else knows that he needs to come from behind that three-quarter line is far beyond what he needs to where he needs to play. He has to come from the middle of the field upwards.
Yes.
I mean, he's not going to be a box to box, of course not. That's not his style. But he needs to come from the middle of the field upwards in the second block to be able to be the effective guy that he is, especially because of his vision of the field, his passing ability in short and long. You know. And the way he turns around and finds easy short passes that actually disconnect the other team. I mean, that's just how smart it is. Because Brugman is a very smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
Period. With the ball, he's something else. And just to give you, do a parenthesis here just to bring, I was looking for the data I just mentioned about a couple of minutes ago. Patrick Jastrzebski led all the players in Atlanta with 8.76 miles covered.
Holy cow.
That's a lot. I mean, that's just a lot. So how in the world, really, I mean, honestly, if I want to play Brugman because of everything that he brings to the table in Texas, in terms of mindset, technicality, and everything else, but how do I sit somebody, and I'm just saying Jasper, it could be anybody else, how do I sit somebody who runs over eight miles in a game for me? It's very difficult.
Here's where I lay with that, Claudio. And it goes back to a thought that I had, and I even asked BJ, and he shook it off like a pitcher and a catcher. He shook it off like, no, I don't want that sign. It was like this. I asked him the question of, do you have a certain lineup in the midfield when it comes to going up against certain opponents? And obviously he says no. But going into the season, you have to have that idea, right? You have to. And so to my viewpoint, I'm thinking, yes, there is a reason why Patrick Jastrzebski is on the bench and you have Gaston Brugman and Eddie Taxeth put together. One, Eddie Taxeth can cover the whole field. We all know what he is. He's the termite, as you like to coin him as. He's the termite that takes up all this space. Gaston Brugman is an artist. He's able to create chances. When you have somebody that is eating up all the field but also has another guy that can complement that creates a good 1-2 punch. So for me as a starting lineup, that would be the A to the B. So like if you have a B midfield, it's Eddie, B pairing that is. It's Eddie and Brugman, or it's Jastrzebski and Brugman, or it's the A team of Eddie and Jastrzebski. I knew from the get-go at the beginning of the season because you bring in a guy like Jastrzebski last year when, you know, you bring in a guy like Jastrzebski and he's just commanding the field immediately. He's a true leader. And I was like, okay, this guy is going to be the starting midfielder for Nashville. And I think the big preseason darling and the surprise was Eddie Tagseth. I don't think anybody thought Eddie Tagseth was going to be this prominent of a midfielder for this Nashville SC side. I mean, probably the higher ups with the club probably did, but nobody probably thought he'd had this early of success. And so with that leading to say Eddie Tagseth and Yazbek would be the new pairing in the midfield. And now that is a solidified thing. I agree.
Yeah, completely. And you have to just look at the few minutes that Jasper came in last night. He's just the type of leader. He knew what he was looking from outside. Besides whatever instruction that BJ and the other guys in the coaching staff gave him outside before he came in, he was already directing traffic and doing all kinds of stuff when he came in the few minutes he played. That's just the kind of leader he is.
Oh yeah,
Jasper is. You know, so he already knows his game. He already knows what's going on, what's drawing him from outside and coming in. But I mean, really. The one question I have is when is that going to happen? I mean, are we going to go the full season thinking that maybe Brugman can only now that I said Brugman again, is he as effective when it comes to playing 20 or 15 minutes, Nick? What kind of game needs to be happening at that particular time? Let's say at minus 60, at minus 65, 70. What kind of game needs to be happening for Nashville, either here or away, for Gaston Brugman to come in and be effective like he is when he starts the game?
Oh, I'd say just an example scenario, a game that's either 0-0 or 1-1. Or if they're down 2-1 and they need to get a goal in the last 15 minutes, there you go. Gaston Brugman is your guy to do that. But my only issue is, and this is just me kind of looking into the future, if it's a team that likes to be really good on the counterattack or they have some very fast forwards, that's where I would be hesitant in bringing Gaston Brugman in. Because that's where the speed separates. And no offense, obviously you may be really good with your feet, but at the same time, you have to be able to track back if you're, you know, creating a lot of chances. Boom, one counterattack and that game's over.
I mean, not that I disagree with you. It's just that we have different ways of seeing things. I mean, in my case, Brugman will have to come whenever this team is winning. Maybe, I don't know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're going to basically use him as an enforcer at the end if Nashville is already winning.
I mean, you just go in there, hold the ball, pass correctly. I mean, make the other guys, the other team chase you and the rest of the guys.
Kind of like a closing pitcher. I got it.
Make him chase the ball. Yeah, that's right. You just gotta be holding the whole thing there and making sure. And if you have a chance, of course, we're going to counterattack. We're going to create a play to score another goal and stuff. But and he can do that. He can do that very well. My problem is, and that goes to the issue that each player has inside himself. Is that enough for me? Are those enough minutes? Is that what I want? When I know that I can give this team more if I get to start, but I don't. You know.
Yeah.
That really. I'm trying to put. Which I shouldn't, but I tried to put Brookman's shoes in this case. We're talking about him. And try and say, well, I mean, I'll play any minute, 10, 5, 15, 20. But where do I know that I can contribute the most with this team? I'm not sure. I mean, that's the thing I'm saying, that it is difficult for a coach.
Yeah, and especially for BJ Callahan.
Especially after... I mentioned it again. After you see guys like Corcoran and Wyatt giving the kind of game they gave last night,
you got to give Matthew Corcoran a nickname. We got to think about this, man. This is your guy. This is your youngster. This is your midfielder.
He is. I mean, I'm gonna come up with that real quick. I'm gonna just think about it now that you tell me, because I already have the termite, which I think is if it's. I have to tell Eddie that about what he says.
Oh, I bet he'd love it.
He's cool. He's a very cool guy. But I had to find Matthew Corker or something else as well. But he's just...
go ahead. You
know.
Sorry.
No. I was already started thinking about what I'm going to call him next, his nickname. But I'll come up with something. We'll see.
Before Saturday, you'll think of something for sure.
Yeah,
you mentioned the word issues earlier, Claudio, and there's one issue I want to get to before we get to our picks for Saturday, and it's center back Walker Zimmerman, one of the faces of this franchise, a club that is. I'm torn with my thought here because obviously the month of May has 8 games. They've already played 2 of the 8, so you have 6 remaining. Pretty good second grade math there. But I'm just curious, where do you see this injury lingering towards, Claudio? Do you think this head injury for Walker Zimmerman lingers to the 24th of this month, which is away at Toronto? Do you think we see him before this home stretch is over? Because my biggest issue is right now is that Nashville right now in the back seems to be pretty fundamentally sound with Jason Palacios and Jack Mayer back there. And so where do you fit? Obviously, you fit Walker right back into the lineup for sure, but when does he come back? When will fans be able to see the face of the back line?
Well, let me put it this way. Do I think, just like anybody else, that Walker is a main figure in this team in the history of the franchise? Yes. And it doesn't matter if I think that way. It's just the case. It's just what it is. Now, do I think, honestly believe that Walker Zimmerman is needed right now? No. No, it's not. I mean, it's just the truth. This is what it is. This is what I'm seeing from Jason and Palacios and Mayer. They're together. And even by looking at what my, what's his name?
Wyatt Meyer
did last night.
And Chris Applewhite.
And Chris Applewhite. Hey, come on. You know, that's what it is. That's the truth. Now, the comeback of Zimmerman will make our defense stronger? Of course you will. Yes. And in our attacking as well. That's one thing that you have to consider. But at the same time, if we were talking about a different player, now in terms of just the player itself, not the figure, not the leadership, not what he means for the team, I have to say this, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, or maybe our listeners, but if it's one player historically in Nashville that has always been an issue to come back from injury, is Walker Zimmerman, for whatever reason. And most of those reasons we ignore. We have never been able to figure out what's happening or why, besides the time that takes for every player to actually nurse an injury. In cases like in Walker's injuries, it seems for whatever reason, like I repeat myself many times, takes the longer than anybody else. Now, we have no details. I mean, pretty much no details. I was going to say a few.
No, we have zero details.
Zero details about this injury. Yeah.
You've asked, Ben's asked, I've asked, everybody has asked BJ Callahan, hey, what is the status update on Walker Zimmerman? And his exact words are, same thing as last week. He's status quo. Same thing as last week. Yeah. Hey, he's going through concussion protocol. Same thing as last week. I have no new updates. Well, you have to have a baseline. I'm not mad at BJ Callahan for not giving us an update. No. I understand that. But at the same time, as the club has to distribute some form of information. I mean, for all we know, Walker Zimmerman could be on vacation in Cabo and just recouping that way. Because that, if it were me, I'd be like, hey, I guess Walker's on vacation in Cabo. I'm joking, obviously. But
of course, yeah.
Come on. You have to give some sort of black smoke or white smoke indicator of, like, how is Walker Zimmerman?
I mean, and this is the culture of this team. If we have to go back and leaving alone Walker Zimmerman, his name as his injury, this is the way this team has decided since day one to manage this type of information, which I think is absurd. And the reason I think it's absurd is because, I mean, if you really like, and we love to inform things about this club, and we follow the team everywhere, then the team should probably say, well, I mean, the media has been good to us. They always inform me the good things, stuff about the bad stuff too. We should be, kinder. How would you call this, Nick, with them and try to give them a little more detail about what happens to our players, not just Walker.
Yeah, just be a little bit more transparent. I mean, be more transparent with the information.
And the reason I say that is because bigger teams, huge teams, huge historical teams in Europe and everywhere else, even national teams, come back to to media and say, hey, this guy is going through this particular injury right now. This is the stage. Even doctors say what's going on. Nothing wrong, nothing weird, nothing is going to happen. Nobody's going to use that information for anything else. I don't think even coaches can do, rival coaches can do anything, especially the way Nashville is doing stuff with the back line right now. So I don't know why the secret stuff is all about in this type of cases, particularly for Nashville, I have to say, you know. And there is a case that I know very well about where I decided at one point not to start using whatever the MLS gives us about the injuries, especially not in Nashville, because I knew the injury was not what they reported. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
I agree.
And I have to say it right here because it's the truth. I'm not making up things. I mean, I said, why would I start reporting to whoever is nice enough to read what I say, especially in Spanish, if that's not true? I already know it's not true because I know what's going on with the player myself, and it doesn't fit with the information the team is willing to give away. Yeah. I would say, if you're not going to tell me the truth, don't tell me anything.
Well, I mean, that's what you're getting. I'm fine with it. If they're not going to tell you anything, they're not going to tell you anything. That's what we're getting right now, the silent treatment.
Well, I'm better off right now, to be honest with you.
Okay, good to know. I mean, to me, I'm a little perturbed about it. I mean, obviously you are too, but just come on. That is the face of your franchise. You got to give some sort of indicator. That's just me, all right? And you're right, Claudio. In years past, if it was the Achilles injury, obviously the return on that was quite some time. Soreness in that. It just, you know, makes me think. Maybe he is taking this one day at a time, but that still doesn't give the club any sort of idea not to give an update, you know?
No, I mean, and not that I'm wishing anybody anywhere, any player to fall injured or anything, but right. Next time it happens, one of the big teams that I was kind of mentioning, because I just forgot who one of them would, I'm going to write it down and come back to what the situation is and the way they handle things in terms of telling the media and telling the fans what's going on with a particular player. I mean, what is so difficult about doing something like that? I just don't get it.
I guess with their injury, they also have the lottery number, so I guess that's why they can't say it.
I wish it was that, because then that'd be more pushy.
Yeah, exactly. So Nashville going into Saturday's game against Charlotte FC, the rematch game or match that Nashville has been wanting, I guess. Valeri even asked after the game against Chattanooga Tuesday night, is this being used as some form of motivation or anything like that? And BJ Callahan shook it off, says, no, this is not looked at as some form of motivation, but we will be out there playing our hardest for sure, and obviously as a coach should say. But this will be an interesting game, match, however you want to say it, however you want to phrase it. Sam Surridge, who has been on fire as of late, 11 matches, 6 goals. Hani Mukhtar right behind him as that, you know, sub-sided striker there, 11 matches, 4 goals. I mean, this team is hitting on all cylinders right now. The top team, that is, the A team, the MLS A team for Nashville SC. Charlotte got the best of them at home. I think on natural grass, I give the upper edge to Nashville, being one, they're at home. Two, natural grass is kind of what BJ Callahan has said in press conferences, that we prefer to play on natural grass. I don't know what else to tell you guys. We prefer to play on natural grass. So,
you know,
I think for Nashville's sake, this game could bode well for them. I'm predicting more on a 2-1, 3-1. Again, I would love for Joe Willis to have a clean sheet, but I think Charlotte's attack is pretty strong. I don't think we're going to see another 7-2 performance out of Nashville. I'm thinking maybe 2-1 or 3-1 game for Nashville.
But I mean, and you said something that is a lot of stuff that is right, but I'm just sticking to the one point. The Charlotte stack is pretty good, but I have news for you and everybody else.
Oh,
is not just as good as Nashville.
It's true.
that's crazy. Look at this. Well, the only thing that's different, and it's big difference, because they're in the fifth place in the conference with 19 points. Nashville's got 17. Oh, that makes a big difference. I mean, 2 points is different. But then when you go to the other stuff, what makes difference is that they have actually have one more win than Nashville does. But when it comes to goal differential, they're 6-6 both. Nashville had more goals in favor, 20. They have 18. That's why I say Nashville is better. but they're better in defending by 2 goals. They mm-hmm. only received 12. Nashville 14. Now this is what's amazing about these two teams. Of course, Charlotte's better away with 5 victories, one lost. Nashville 4 victories, 1 loss, 1 tie. But when it comes to away games, which is very important in this case, because the team that's coming here is Charlotte, they're both the same. 1 victory away, 3 losses and 1 tie. So he cannot get any more, you know, tight between two teams at these two.
I will say for attacking purposes, and thank you for correcting me a little bit, I mean, Charlotte's offensive attack is not as, I mean, it's just as good as Nashville's. I think for Nashville, and BJ's mentioned this as well, we've realized it, this team creates a lot of chances inside the box. And that's what you want to be able to disrupt the opposing defense, whatever. But when Charlotte attacks, I'm not saying they attack with purpose, as in more purpose in Nashville. It's just they have less opportunities to score. They just capitalize on their small amount of opportunities that they have on goal.
I agree. I mean, they have less opportunities, but they actually score more goals out of those instead of Nashville. Because you got to realize, Nashville's got the 20 goals in favor, but 7 came from one game, mm-hmm. you know? 7 came from one game. That makes a big difference. And what we need to see, perhaps, I don't know if everybody would love to have to be his team or her team is scoring 7 goals every game, but no. What you need to see is a team that actually takes advantage of that many opportunities they create and score, I don't know, 2 or 3 every game they have them. Why not? If they created them already, come on, capitalize, like you said, capitalize on him. I mean, one thing is to not create him. That would be very more difficult to score. But if you have him, if you get him right there, well, do it. Take advantage of it. That's probably one thing that maybe I'm not going to say Nashville is lacking, because his 20 goals would not give me the reason. But the fact is that in many games we've seen that even last night, the team creates, gets there, but for they are not able to accomplish and finish the play. But if they start doing that, this team is going to be even better. But they have to be very careful with Charlotte. They have to be very careful with them. They can score on you for sure.
So what is your prediction, Claudio?
I'm going to give them Nashville because of the way things are coming and the fact that they're playing in Jody's Park. I'm going to give them a 3-1 victory.
3-1. Who scores for you?
Well, I'm still, and this is because I want to see it. Maybe not. He's not even showing me that he would be able to do it. But I want Eddie, just because he deserves it, to score. I want Jasvik because he deserves as well. And I want to see another game, another ball. Why not? I want to see another goal from one of the defenders.
Okay, another defender goal.
I want to see a Nahar. I want to see anybody in the well, hold on. I want to see a Mayer goal. Everybody else has scored.
Oh, Jack Nahar Mayer scored. Is not on the score sheet yet. You're right.
He's not. So I want to see Mayer. Why not?
Get the milkman on the horizon there.
I mean, let's see. Lovitz scored 2 already. Nahar scored. Jason Palacios scored.
Bauer scored 2 across all competitions.
Bauer. So we need Mayer to actually come through this Saturday.
Okay. Well, as for my 3 goals, because I'm going with the 3-1 victory as well, I'm going to go Sam Surridge. I'm going to go Andy Nahar. And the third one always stumps me. Who should I get to score the third goal? I'm going to go with the Aussie. I'm going to go with Patrick Yazbek. I want to see if he does some sort of celebration. I asked him about it a few weeks ago. Is he going to go with a rugby celebration? We'll have to see. That is to be determined.
I think he will.
He just might. He just might. Claudio, what do you have?
Well, remember, hold on before we go. We have lunch this Saturday.
Oh, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know more about this, Claudio, tell them what this wager was between you and Valer.
Well, I mean, Valer, which I should have done it years before, but I did it this time and I chose the wrong time. Anyways, by the way, I feel sorry for whatever happened today. But Valer is a big time Arsenal fan. I'm a big time Real Madrid. And we kind of got the wager on those two games that I got big time. And of course, I doubled it Remember, I doubled it with the yes. With the
Claudio seven thought it would be generous and a good idea because both Hani and Sam Surge, the Chicago game, both Hani and Sam Surge had two goals going into the second half. And of course, what would Claudio say? He goes, "Oh, Valera, double or nothing. If Hani gets the hat trick before Sam, you have to buy the lunch." And Claudio goes, "And if that doesn't happen, if Sam gets it before Hani, I got to buy lunch. Double or nothing." And sure enough, what happened, Claudio? Sam Surge.
Well, but Valera, he's too smart. He's just too smart. I remember, if you remember, you recall that completely. Right before I was able to choose anything, he'd already, but I'm taking Surge, he goes.
And boy, am I glad Hani did not get a third goal because I would have been paying for both of you guys' lunch. I decided to dip my toe in the water and said, you know what, if they both get a hat trick, I'll pay for the lunch. I don't know why I said that. I was stupid.
You know, I don't know why you said that, but that was risky on that game.
Very risky, because anything could happen.
Well, anyways, Valer's Arsenal got beaten today by the
PSG.
PSG, and they're not going to be able to go to a final, which they thought they were ready for it after beating the Real Madrid. And, you know, it has nothing to do with it, but it's kind of a funny detail, if you may. Both teams that beat Real Madrid, they're both gone.
Yeah, you're right. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. So I guess, you know, if you're gonna win it, you got to do it like the ones in fight that they didn't have to play the Real Madrid and they're in their Inter and PSG. Yep.
That will be a fun UCL final. That'll be a great final,
actually.
I just hope Inter Milan shows up and they don't play, you know, this Inzaghi ball that's boring sometimes. So I think I might give the upper edge to PSG. I don't know. We'll have to see. In due time, Claudio.
We'll see.
Well, that's the end of this episode of the Talking Calcio podcast here on the Game Nashville Sports Network. If you have a question for either Claudio or I, you can reach out to my Twitter at NickFrazier23, or you can reach out to Claudio at Nashville Total Sport on Twitter. If you have any other questions or you want to follow, you can follow on all the social media platforms or whatever you listen to the podcast on, Spotify, Apple, Audio Boom, Google, whatever it is. You can find it at The Game Nashville Sports Network Talking Calcio. And we'll see you on the next episode. Ci vediamo.